You speak English?
Yes.
Okay, because I have difficulty sometimes, so I slip into other languages, you know. I want to talk today about these lovely sources having to do with B'dieved and L'chatchila. But before we look at the sources, let me make one brief observation. It is generally said, and I know a lot can be, many proofs can be brought against what I'm about to tell you. What I'm about to tell you is the normal approach of most of the poskim. The whole concept of l'chatchila b'dieved has to do only with dinim d'rabbanim and not with dinim min ha-Torah. Now, although that is like common wisdom amongst many poskim, there are proofs which can be brought against what I just said. But suffice it to say that in general, that's the way people normally look at things. The l'chatchila b'dieved has to do with dinim d'rabbanim and not dinim d'raisa. Now, of course, not every din d'rabbanim is muta b'dieved. Certain dinim d'rabbanim have this distinction, this chiluk between l'chatchila b'dieved. Not every din d'rabbanim becomes muta b'dieved. That's fairly obvious. And now the question which I wish to discuss on the basis of the sources, the important question in my mind, is at what point in time is b'dieved b'dieved? Now, the reason it's so important to clarify this question is because of the Rabbi Fink theory of Isurim, which I've enunciated once in the past, and now we'll see how important the theory is when we actually look at practical cases. The theory works as follows. Isurim come in many different levels. Some things are Torah prohibitions, other things are Durabanim. Even within Torah prohibitions, there are many levels. Some things are only a Chayav Makas, some things are Chayav Misa. Even within the things which are Chayav Misa, there are different levels of Misa. Things which are Asur D'Rabbanan at different levels, some things are Asur only because of Minig. My point is that Isurim come in many different levels. It's critically important to know the level of different Isurim when one finds oneself in the unfortunate situation where whatever you do, you're going to violate something. So you have to choose the more lenient violation. You have to choose the less severe violation if you have no choice about violating something. That's clear. Now, up until this point, there's nothing controversial. Now begins the controversial point. According to me, heter is what is left after all the levels of Isurim go away. If you have no level of Isur pertaining to a given situation, what is left is heter, what is left is permitted, what is left is mutter, and it follows, according to my way of thinking, that all heterim are equal. Although Isurim are by no means equal, Isurim come at many different levels, all heterim are equal. Two bowls of food, both of which are mutter, are equally mutter. There's no such thing as being more or less muta. Everything which is muta is equally muta. And therefore, according to the way I'm presenting things, if I have a bowl of food which is muta l'chatchila, and another bowl of food right next to it which is muta b'dieved, and if it is b'dieved, and therefore both bowls of food are muta, according to the way I'm explaining things, two bowls are equally muta, and there's no adifut, no preference for one bowl or the other. That's from the halachic point of view. Of course, from the Hasidic point of view, things are very different. Dare I, in this context, in this format, mention the Hasidic view of things? According to the Bnei Yisachar, the great Dinevah, the Bnei Yisachar, one of the most important Hasidic svarim, according to him, if you have a choice between one bowl of food, which is mutter l'chatchila, and the other bowl of food, which is mutter b'dieved, of course the Hasidic preference would be to eat from the bowl of food which is mutter b'dieved. After all, if you eat from the bowl which is mutter l'chatchila, all you did was you eat something mutter. Well, that's good. But if you eat from the bowl which is mutter b'dieved, not only are you eating something mutter, but you are expressing your emunas chachamim, because Chazal taught you, according to a limud in the Gemara, that it's mutter b'dieved. And therefore you get extra credits for eating the food which is mutter b'dieved. Well, but that's the Hasidic dimension. From the halachic point of view, as I formulated, there shouldn't be any adifus, no preference between two. Everything which is mutter is equally mutter. Okay, now let's look at the sources and see how it works out. Of course, you're free to to reject my ideas, but the sources are the sources. Tana Rabbanan, it's a Gemara in Kiddushin. Ein lochim behema b'ma'as ma'aser sheni. Rashi says, chutz mi'irushalayim. The idea is as follows. If you have produce of the land, fruits, vegetables, grains, whatever it is, anything which grew in the land of Israel, everyone knows that everything which grows in the land of Israel has kedusha, it's tevel. You have to be mafrish, trumot and maserot. So among the trumot and maserot, you have to separate from the produce of the land. Is maaser sheni, that's one of the things you have to separate. Maaser sheni, what you're supposed to do is take it with you when you go to Yerushalayim for the regel, for Sukkot, Pesach, and so forth. When you go to the Yerushalayim for the regel, you bring that food along with you, and you eat it in Yerushalayim. Maaser sheni, you're supposed to take to Yerushalayim and eat it there. Of course, there's some possibility, depending upon the food we're talking about, it might rot by the time the regel comes along, and it might be very inconvenient. Even if it doesn't rot, it might be very inconvenient to transport all of your food with you from wherever you're going to Yerushalayim. And therefore, what you can do is chilul, transfer of the kedusha of Maaser Sheni onto a coin. Then you can take the coin to Yerushalayim, use the coin to buy food, and eat the food in Yerushalayim during the regel, which is a much more practical situation. So here we have someone who has taken his tomatoes or whatever it is. He separated Maaser Sheni. He said, "Well, I don't want to be bothered with taking these tomatoes to Yerushalayim. I'll be mechalel. I'll transfer the kedusha onto a coin." Now he's got a coin which has the kedusha of Maaser Sheni in it. Not allowed to use that coin for any purpose but to buy food in Yerushalayim during the regel. And the Braisa tells us, I'm not allowed to use that coin to buy an animal outside of Yerushalayim. Why am I not allowed to use that to buy an animal outside of Yerushalayim? In Yerushalayim, I could use it to buy an animal and eat the animal. But outside of Yerushalayim, I'm not allowed to use it to buy an animal. Dichsiv, Rashi says, to Pasuk, V'tzata ha-kesef b'yadcha v'halachta l'makom asher yivchar Hashem. A Pasuk says, you have to take the money
in your hand,
you have to take the money and go to Yerushalayim, the place which God chooses, and you're not allowed to spend that money outside of Yerushalayim, even though you might intend buying food outside of Yerushalayim and bringing it to Yerushalayim and eat there. That's no good. You either bring the original fruits and vegetables to Yerushalayim, the original Maaser Sheni fruits and vegetables. If you don't want to bring the originals, you transfer the kedusha onto a coin. You must bring the coin to Yerushalayim, and there, in Yerushalayim, you'll buy food to eat for the regal.
Roughly, would it matter at all what price you're paying? Like, if you could buy one apple in Yerushalayim or 10 apples outside Yerushalayim?
You know, the market price goes according to the market price in the location where you are. What do you suppose that they would raise the prices just because all the pilgrims are eager to buy fruits? No, they wouldn't do that. Now the price continues. Im lakach b'shogeg. Here's someone who b'shogeg used the Maaser Sheni coin to buy an animal outside Yerushalayim. Shelo yada shehen ma'ot Maaser Sheni. He got his coins mixed up. And he thought he was buying the animal with an ordinary coin. And it turns out he bought the animal with a coin which has kedusha of Maaser Sheni. So what should you do? Yachzur u'damun l'mekomam. What you should do is mevatel the sale. The sale turns out to be batel. After all, it's a mekach tos, a mistake, a fundamental mistake in the sale. The guy never intended to use this money to buy that animal, and therefore there was a fundamental error in the kavana. In the original sale, the sale should be bottled, the animal goes back to the original owner, the coin goes back to the original owner of the coin, and we start all over again. He should now take that coin up to Yerushalayim and buy fruits and vegetables, buy food during the regal. B'mezid, if he knew full well that he was using a Maaser Sheni coin outside of Yerushalayim and he's not allowed to do that to buy the animal, if he knew full well what he was doing and he did it b'mezid, he did it wrong, ta'ale, he should bring that animal up to Yerushalayim, v'tochal b'mokam, and he should eat the animal in Yerushalayim. Okay? That's the halacha according to the Braisa. Now you'll notice in passing that according to Rashi, the requirement of taking the coin up to Yerushalayim is a deraisa. After all, he learns it straight from a pasuk. Tosfos disagrees. Tosfos has a whole different view of this sugya, and it's the view of Tosfos which predominates in the thinking of all the later poskim. Tosfos disagrees with Rashi. Rashi says the tam ha'isur is because of this pasuk. Hare ein adam sarich lechalel ma'isa sheni al kesef el kedei laholich et ama'ot liyushalayim v'lachzor leknot behen ochel acher. Tosfos says that the only reason to transfer the kedusha of the fruits and vegetables onto a coin is in order to be able to bring the coin up to Yerushalayim and buy food there during the regel and eat it. Lefize, yesh le'esor chilul ma'aser sheni rak al davar she'eino ochel. It follows, according to the thinking of Tosfos, that there's no problem in using that coin anywhere, even outside Yerushalayim, to buy food, as long as what you're buying is food. And you'll take the food up to Yerushalayim. You take the coin up to Yerushalayim, you take the coin, you buy food with it, and that's okay. That's what the coin is intended for. The coin is intended for buying food that you will then eat in Yerushalayim during the regel. Okay. Mutar lechalel ma'aser sheni al ochel, kagon behema. Tosfos has no problem in using the ma'aser sheni coin to buy an animal. After all, you can eat it. L'holichol Yerushalayim, take the animal to Yerushalayim and eat it there. And indeed, maybe the reason you want to do that is because the price of animals will be greater in Yerushalayim. You can buy a better animal cheaper outside Yerushalayim. So you buy the goat, then you bring the goat up to Yerushalayim, meshecht it there, and you eat it during the regel. Tosfos has no problem with that at all. Except, of course, that the brisa that he's explaining said that it's awesome. But in theory, Tosfos has no problem with that at all. Nira Liri, Tosfos explains as follows. Nira Liri Lefarish Etama Isur Meshum Gezera Shema Yegadel Adarim Adarim. Tosfos therefore says that since in theory there's no problem in using that coin to buy food outside Yerushalayim, the only reason the Braisa in the Gemara asks it, it must be a Gezera Derabanan. That's nothing to do with any pasuk in the Torah. It's not a din deraisa. It's a gezera derabanan that you're not allowed to use the ma'aser sheni coin to buy an animal outside Yerushalayim, even if you intend to bring it up to Yerushalayim and eat it there. Why? Shema yegadel adarim adarim. If you use the coin to buy an animal outside Yerushalayim, animals tend to procreate, and if they do it often enough, you'll end up with herds and herds of ma'aser sheni animals. And now we're really going to be in trouble. The country's going to be flooded with ma'aser sheni animals, and who's going to keep track of which is which, and which has kedusha, and which doesn't have kedusha, and the ones which are ma'aser sheni can only be eaten in Yerushalayim during the regel. It's really a mess. In order to avoid the whole mess, Chazal said, do not transfer the kedusha of a ma'aser sheni coin onto an animal outside Yerushalayim. Do not buy an animal with those coins outside Yerushalayim, so as to avoid the possibility of creating flocks or herds of ma'aser sheni animals. It's a gezer d'rabbanan, you're not allowed to do it.
The person who redeems the coin inside Yerushalayim for an animal, or even if they had a flock, he himself or his family doesn't have to eat them. He could give the meat away.
Someone else can eat it in Yerushalayim. Sure, as long as it gets eaten in Yerushalayim during the regel, it doesn't matter who eats it. And of course, under normal circumstances, the Gezerah Derabanan should aser using the Kedusha of Ma'aser Sheni coins to buy female animals which could give birth. Isur zeh chal gam al zchar. But since Chazal were making the prohibition of using the coin to buy an animal, they said you can't buy any animal, male or female. The Gezeh Gazrin and Zchara Matun the Kavis, since the idea applies only to female animals, well, I suppose not everyone, non-farmers don't always know the difference at a glance between male and, I don't know exactly what the reason is, but you can't buy male animals either.
So I think the offspring of a male animal redeemed from Ma'aser Sheni wouldn't be considered?
Right, only the female. If the female has the Kedusha, then the offspring will. It doesn't matter what the male has. Doesn't matter if the male have kedusha. Men don't have such kedusha. It's women that have kedusha. Everyone knows that. Nimtza shekoha isur eno el gezer d'rabanan. So we have now we're now following the approach of Tosfos, very different from the opinion of Rashi. According to Rashi, the whole din of taking the coin up to Yerushalayim is a din deraisa. According to Tosfos, the only problem in using the coin outside Yerushalayim to be by an animal is a gezeirah derabanan, lest we end up with herds, which have maisa sheni. Achda aka, the problem is, halo klal nakut biadenu, do we not have a firm klal, bolsoyo pravilo, do we not have a firm rule? The rule, which is well established in the poskim, is kol chilul, any transfer of kedusha from a coin to a food or the other way around, any transfer of kedusha, which is asam adirabanan, b'diavad mahani, b'diavad works. Now, if the rule is that any transfer of kedusha, which is asur midirabanan, and here we have an example of transfer of kedusha, which is asur midirabanan, you're not allowed to use the coin to buy an animal, but b'diavad mahani, b'diavad it should work. And if it works b'diavad, why does the brisa tell us that you should cancel the sale and the animal should go back to the original owner and the coin should go back to the original owner? If b'diavad, the transfer of kedusha works, it doesn't matter if you're a mazin or a shogeg. It worked, and now you're stuck with a behemoth which has maisa sheni. You weren't allowed to do it, but that animal which has the kedusha of maisa sheni, you should take up to Yerushalayim and eat there. Imkein lama mashmu besuka delo mahani b'diavad. Elazeh klal. Tosfos is then forced to the following klal, and this is the big conclusion, which is of terrible importance. I realize that the dinim of transfer of kedusha of maisa sheni are not ordinary problems which come up every day in our lives. But the principle which Tosfos derives from this turns out to be of vital significance in hundreds of everyday situations. Here's the rule: b'chol davar she b'diavad mahani le. In any situation where we say b'diavad, the halachic procedure works. L'chatchila, you're not allowed to do such and such. You're not allowed to transfer the kedusha. But b'diavad, if you do it, it works. Im yesh takana l'davar. Wherever it's possible to fix or correct the situation, afilu b'diavad lo mahani. The b'diavad rule, the b'diavad halacha does not apply until such time as it is impossible to remedy the situation. At the moment that it is impossible to correct the situation, to remedy the situation, then the dinim of b'diavad apply. Until during the period when it is still possible to remedy the situation, still possible to correct the matter, then the dinim b'diavad do not apply, only the dinim l'chatchila apply. I amrin mahani, kachli b'diavad kamo shahaya osa bo b'tchila. Otherwise, there'd be no difference between the l'chatchila and b'diavad according to Tosfos. It works as follows. If it's still possible to set things right, still possible to return the animal to the original owner and return the coin to the original owner and set things right, as long as it's still possible to set things right, then the dinim l'chatchila apply, and l'chatchila, this whole thing is prohibited, and you're not allowed to use this animal, and the whole thing is asur. At the moment that it becomes impossible to remedy the situation, you can no longer do it right, from that point in time on, the dinim b'diavad apply. Now, let's take this principle and apply it in a simple case. You all know the dinim of kli she'eno ben yomo. Is that a familiar concept? Kli she'eno ben yomo works as follows. A kli is a cooking utensil, an eating utensil, a pot, a pan, a dish, a fork, anything from the kitchen, anything which is used with food is a kli. A kli can be ben yomo or eno ben yomo. A kli is ben yomo, means that the kli has absorbed some isur, some pork, was cooked in the pot. For the first 24 hours after the absorption of pork taste into the pot is called a kli ben yomo. It's within its first day, within its first 24 hours of having absorbed the taste of pork. That's a kli ben yomo. Once 24 hours have elapsed, the kli now changes its status into a kli she'eno ben yomo. It's no longer within the first 24 hours of having absorbed the taste of pork. The din is as follows. You cook the pork in the pot, you remove the pork, you clean the pot, and now you boil water in the pot. Now the question is, the water which I've now boiled, is it mutter or is it asur? The halacha is that if the kli is ben yomo, if the kli was within 24 hours of having absorbed the taste of pork, the water is usser, and the water is equally usser deraisa, just like the original pork was. If, however, this pot has not been used in a long time, and only in the ancient history of this pot, more than 24 hours ago means ancient history, if in the ancient history of this pot it had been used for cooking pork, and now the pot is clean, and I boil water in it, what? You're not allowed to do that. Not allowed to use that pot for kosher food. It's usser to use that pot for kosher food. But b'di'eved, if you use the pot for boiling water, b'di'eved, the water is permitted. And according to the Rabbi Fink theory, once that water is permitted, it's equally permitted with any other water in the world. You have two cups of tea, one made with hot water from this pot, another made with hot water from an entirely kosher pot. The two cups of tea are equally permitted.
Don't we use hot water, boiling water, to kosher the pot?
Yeah, that's what we. But we wait 24 hours before doing that. The pot should not have been used within the last 24 hours for this reason.
So after 24 hours, not only is the water kosher, but now Right.
Right. Now, if you think about what you've just said, you'll come to a very interesting conclusion. You remember I said before that in general the chiluk between the lachatchil and b'di'evad has to do with dinim derabbanan. It follows, does it not, that the prohibition to use the pot, which is after 24 hours have elapsed since it had been used for pork, the prohibition to use the pot is a prohibition derabbanan. Min ha-Torah, there's no prohibition here at all. The prohibition to use the treif pot, treif because in its ancient history it became treif more than 24 hours ago, that's a prohibition derabbanan. Now let me see if I can formulate an underlying concept here which will go far to explain much of what's going on. As you know, there are two kinds of isurim which are possible. Sometimes a chefetz, an object, can be aser, for example, a piece of pork. Sometimes the object is not usser. Sometimes we are prohibited from doing certain things. There's a difference in concept between a prohibition which falls upon the person. He's not allowed to do something, for example, eat something, as opposed to a prohibition which falls upon an object. The object is a prohibited object. Sometimes it's one, sometimes it's the other, and it's very important to clarify the differences because often there are important halachic distinctions to be drawn. For example, in general, nedarim, something you make a neder, someone makes a neder that he's not going to eat any apples or something like this. In general, nedarim aser objects. In general, shvuot, on the other hand, aser people from not doing something. There's a world of difference between a neder, not to eat an apple, and a shvuah, not to eat an apple. Someone who makes a neder, not to eat an apple, the apple becomes prohibited for him. Someone who makes a shvuah, not to eat an apple, he's not allowed to eat the apple. Now you're wondering, what's the difference? Or what difference does it make? Bottom line, he still can't eat the apple. Well, it turns out there's a big difference between them. After all, a neder, in order to be a neder, needs a physical object in reality to fall upon. If there's no physical object in reality for the neder to fall upon, then you cannot have a neder, whereas a shvua just needs a person to fall upon. He's not allowed to do something. And someone who has previously made a shvua to do something and subsequently makes a shvua not to do it, so the second shvua is highly problematic. Where someone who has made a shvua to eat something and subsequently makes a neder not to eat it, the neder is valid, as is the original shvua, and now he's in trouble. So a neder and a shvua can contradict each other. Shvua and a shvua, in general, not. In any event, one could talk about these distinctions at great length. The pot, which was used to cook the pork, for the first 24 hours after the absorption of the pork, the pot is usser. The pot is usser. Since the pot is usser, because it has absorbed the taste of isur, and therefore the pot is usser, the water which I boil in it becomes usser. Once 24 hours have elapsed, The absorbed taste of pork in the pot no longer has the capacity to asser anything. It is no longer a prohibited object. There's only an isur derabanan. I'm not allowed to use that pot. If inadvertently I did use it, got mixed up by I boiled the water in the treif pot. I meant to do it in the kosher. I made a mistake. I boiled the water in the treif pot, and then I called the rabbi and asked, "Well, what, can I use the water, or maybe something more valuable than water? And it's really a lot of money involved." I called the rabbi and asked, "Can I use it?" And the rabbi asks, "When's the last time you used the pot?" And I say, "Oh, ancient history. I haven't used the pot for more than 24 hours." As well, the rabbi will say, "You weren't allowed to use the pot, but then you didn't know that. You were shogeg about that. But the food is mutter. There was only an isa derabanan which fell upon the person not to use the pot, but the pot is not prohibited, and therefore the water which was boiled in it is permitted." You got the basic idea? Okay. Let's go.
Tom, is Tom an isa
deraisa? Tom ke ikar is deraisa. Well, that's how we pass it. Tom ke ikar deraisa. Now, let's go one step further. We have on the bottom of the first page here this Indian of Tanur Shaheris. Halacha is as follows. Natal Eitzim Asur Bahano. If you take some wood, which is Asur Bahano, for example, it had been used for a Vodah Zarah, or maybe it fell from the tree and on Yontif or something like that, you know, it's unusual, but there are situations in which wood might be Asr Bahana. You take this wood, which is Asr Bahana, Hisik Bahen et a Tanur Shacheres, and you use the wood to heat up an oven made of earthenware. What's the halacha? The halacha is, since the oven was heated with the fire from the wood, which is Asr Bahana, so mamele, you can't use the hot oven. Therefore, yutzan. Therefore, let the oven be cooled off. V'achakach yasik be'etzim acher. Then reheat the oven with kosher wood. V'yafo bo, and then you can bake in it. But if you afo bo et apad velotzinu, if you baked the bread in the oven before having cooled it off, using the heat from the prohibited wood, apat asura bahana. The bread is asur bahana. Not allowed to eat the bread, because this bread was heated with the wood, which is asur bahana. Therefore, cool off the oven, start the whole procedure again with kosher wood. Now, the Tosfos, on his little sugya, asks, Lama sugya lein yutzan? Why is it enough if the oven is allowed to cool off? Why is that enough? Shouldn't we have to kasher the oven? Shouldn't the oven need some kind of kashering to get rid of the effects of the original wood? Why is it enough just to cool it off? You should have to kasher the oven, the Tosfos asks. Their answer is, according to the klal, of zev zev gora muta b'di'evit. Now, zev zev gora muta b'di'evit is a big klal throughout Shas, which Tosfos uses here to explain the issue. It works as follows. Zeh v'zeh gorem, we have two things. Zeh v'zeh, two different things. Gorem, causing a certain situation to arise. The result is going to be mutter, even if one of the goremim is asur. So I have two goremim, two factors causing a situation to come into being. One of the factors causing it to come into being is prohibited. The other is permitted. The result is going to be mutter. For example, if I have a cow who, for its entire life, has eaten nothing but chametz. Right? Every molecule in this, every cell in this cow is chametz. That's all it's eaten all its life. The milk produced by this cow on Pesach is asur. If, however, the cow eats a mixture of chametz and non-chametz, ze v'ze gorem, two things are causing the milk. One is prohibited, chametz, the other is permitted, whatever else it's eating, the milk is permitted. I don't have to talk here about ratios, it's not a majority, it's not 60 times, it's not anything. As long as we have two gormim, two causes, the fact that one is prohibited doesn't matter, the animal, the result is going to be permitted. Similarly, if the animal ate only isurei hana'ah its whole life, it ate only avodah zarah food, then the meat is asur. If the animal ate a mixture of prohibited food and permitted food, the meat of the animal is going to be permitted. If I fertilize the field with a mixture of permitted fertilizer and prohibited fertilizer, the crop which grows will be permitted. If it's if the field is fertilized entirely with treif fertilizer, then that's enough to aser the field, because we have only one gorem, only one thing causing the crop to grow. Zev is a gorem mutter. As soon as there's a second factor causing the situation to come into being, and that second factor is permitted, mutter.
I'm thinking in the case of the fertilizer, you have to really be able to say that
The crop wouldn't grow without the fertilizer.
Wouldn't grow at all.
If the crop wouldn't grow without the fertilizer is doing it. If the fertilizer is aser, that aser is the crop. Now, Lachem, the Tosfa says, Al pisha tanur ha'aser, the atzei aheta shnehem gormim la'afiyat ha'pat, b'tievet ha'pat muteret. If you cool off the oven and reheat the oven with kosher wood, so we have two things causing the baking of the bread, the kosher wood, and the treif left over in the oven from the first time around. Zev v'zev gorem mutter. After all, we're not talking here about taste. If we were talking here about taste, then the rule of 60 would apply. But we're not talking here about the rule of taste. We're talking here about the question of what causes the bread to be baked. That's a question of gorem, and as long as one of the factors, namely the new kosher wood, is involved, that's enough to permit the bread which is being baked.
Are we still talking about the case where the oven is cooled off?
Yeah, when the oven is cooled off.
So that isn't the wood that has the Israel not even causing it to be cooked if the oven is cooled?
On the contrary, the first wood, the first treif wood, I see, you're a city slicker. as anyone from the village would be happy to explain to you, the first batch of wood, the treif wood, which heated the oven, that fired the oven, and the first time you fire the oven, that's what makes the earthenware oven strong. The oven is very weak until it's fired the first time, and had it not been fired with that treif wood, it would not have been strong and would not have done the job. Okay? Kevan, the ein takana l'tanur ze ela im kein yutatz shaharei ze nechshav k'diavad. Now kli cheres. As you know, many things can be kashered through Haggalah or Libun, all kinds of kashering processes, all kinds of kashering processes which are fine, but Kli Heres, earthenware, cannot be kashered. Now, since earthenware cannot be kashered, if we would require kashering this earthenware oven, you couldn't do it. You have to destroy the oven. Since destroying the oven is the only option, if it would require kashering, so now it is considered already b'di'evit. Now this is an interesting idea. Here the Tosfos has broadened slightly the idea of b'di'evit, broadened slightly from the idea we saw at the top of the page. At the top of the page, the idea was at that point in time, when it is impossible to remedy the situation, at that point in time, when it is no longer possible to do things correctly, l'chatchila, then the leniencies of b'di'evit apply. Here he points out, that even kodem hamaisa, even before you come to bake the bread, after all, you go find another oven if you want, even before you bake the bread, it's already considered b'di'evit, even before you have baked the bread, because it is impossible to kasher the oven. Since it's impossible to kasher the oven, it's already considered b'di'evit now. The same idea is taken up by the Shach and other poskim, as I point out. The idea is, hecha deletlei takanta, in a situation where no remedy exists, ela b'netitza, except destroying the object, k'di'evit dami, it's considered to be already b'di'evit, and any leniencies b'di'evit can be applied.
Would the monetary loss of gold from your oven be enough to say that it's a situation that can't be remedied?
That's going to be on the next page. We'll talk about that. In certain cases, yes. But we'll talk about that on the next page. So what do we have so far? We have the basic idea of the Tosfos, namely that the leniencies of the d'evit begin at that point in time when you can no longer do things right. The water has already been cooked in that treif pot. Well, if the din is b'di'evit mutter, so b'di'evit mutter. L'chadchila, you weren't allowed, not allowed to use that pot. And if you ask, can I use the pot where b'di'evit the water is going to be permitted? The answer is no. You're not allowed to use that pot. Having already cooked the water, now the water is mutter. Now, the Tosfos in the second, the bottom of the page, broadens the idea slightly. If the pot would have to be kashered lechatchila before you boil the water, the oven would have to be destroyed. There is no way to remedy the situation here. There is no way to correct it. And therefore, even before cooking the water, even before baking the bread, the leniencies of b'di'evit apply, and you can go ahead and prepare the food in a way which would be permitted to be added.
Is there a reason, that you're allowed to do that? The idea comes that...
He said, the idea that Tosfos says that the definition of the Bedi'evit has to do with that point in time when remedy is impossible. And here we have a situation where remedy is impossible even before you prepare the food.
But it's not an idea of monetary loss that...
No. Now, I want to take these ideas to their limit for a moment before discussing other possibilities, and that's at the bottom of page 2, where we have this shasat chak business. Now, I don't know if you are familiar with any Orthodox Torah observant Jews, but if you know any of these creatures, when they travel, they always seek sources of kosher food. They get on the internet and they find out where there are kosher restaurants in the towns they are going to be visiting, and that's where they go to eat. Or if there are no kosher restaurants, they'll go into a store and they'll figure out which products they can buy which are kosher, and that's what they'll survive on whilst they are traveling. Now, it used to be not so simple. It used to be they didn't have internet, and it used to be they didn't have the fat booklet of the Best Inn of London, of all the products which you can buy in supermarkets throughout Great Britain, which are kosher. And therefore, it used to be, when you were traveling from Leeds to London, and you would stay in an inn, I always like that expression, to stay in an inn. You'd stay in an inn, you might be carrying your kosher raw potatoes, raw rice, raw spaghetti, whatever it is with you, but what are you going to cook it in? The inn provides a pot, but it's probably not kosher. Now, the truth is that in the Middle Ages, inns did often have kosher pots. Since there were many Jewish travelers, inns kept frequently kosher pots, which were marked in Hebrew, basar v'chalav, so that the traveling Jews would know what's what. On the other hand, there were many inns which did not have kosher pots available. Well, here you are, staying the night in an inn, and the only pot available is not kosher. Well, it says in the Yoredeya, as indicated here at the bottom of page 2, kol davar shetzarich hadacha kedei lahatira, anything which is usher until it is rinsed off, kegon basar heta tzonen shehutach be'ka'ara shel isur tzonen, all kinds of situations. If cold kosher food touches cold treif food, or even cheese and meat, kosher cheese and kosher meat, if they touch each other cold, the din is hadacha is required, rinsing is required in order to permit the kosher meat and kosher cheese which touched each other, or kosher and treif food which touched each other, rinsing is required in order to permit the food. Assuming we're talking about a kind of food which can be rinsed. Some foods cannot be rinsed, obviously, and then you're in trouble. But if we're talking about a food which could be rinsed, that's what you have to do. L'chatchila, it's usher to eat the food. B'di'evid, if it's been rinsed, you're okay. Usher la'asot l'chatchila, dilma achal b'lo hadacha, is a food which has been in a situation you're not allowed to eat until it has been rinsed. Now the Taz says as follows. The Taz quotes the Taras Achatis, Shebeshasat Chak, if you're stuck somewhere in an inn, Kegon Shenit Achsen, Beveit Ovei Kachavim, you're in an inn which is run by the idol worshippers, and therefore the pots which are available to the guests to cook in are presumably treif. Well, could he have a dummy? It's considered as though it is already b'dievet. There is no way to remedy the situation and cook your rice, your spaghetti, your potatoes in a way which would be lechatchila correct. There's no way to do it lechatchila correctly because there is no kosher pot available. But if you cook it in the treif pot, which presumably has not been used in more than 24 hours, and therefore b'dievet, anything cooked in that pot is going to be permitted, go ahead and lechatchila use the treif pot, because this is shasat chak. Lefiza mutla haniach baser heta tzonin bekavra shel iser tzonin b'shasat chak. The idea of the taz is the shasat chak. That means you have no choice. There is no way to go ahead and prepare the food in a way which is kosher lechatchila. But there is a way to go ahead and prepare the food in a way which will be kosher b'dieved. Go for it and prepare it in a way which is kosher b'dieved.
Do we say this kind of situation doesn't exist anymore because we have the ability of the internet and things like that? Or do we say that if you got in a situation like this, even if you could have checked on the internet, let's say you didn't check on the internet, that's still this kind of same situation?
So you check on the internet, you showed up.
If the remedy exists, that is, you have the ability to prepare your food in a way which is kosher lechatchila, then of course you have to prepare it in a way which is kosher lechatchila. According to the Taz, if you find yourself b'shasat chak, which is defined as meaning a situation in which you find that it is impossible to prepare your food in a way which would be kosher lechatchila, but you do have a means to prepare your food in a way which would be kosher b'dieved, you should go for it. Now, of course, we're talking about food, but the same situation would apply in any other mitzvah situation.
Suppose you know it's going to happen. You've traveled from Leeds to London before. You know that there is no kosher inn on the way. Would you say then that lechatchila you're not allowed to go that route? I mean,
no.
If you know that you're going to be in that situation, you know what inn you're going to stop at, and you know that inn doesn't have kosher pot.
There is no prohibition to put yourself in a situation where you will have to do the din in a way which is b'dievet. Let me see if I can formulate that in a more straightforward way. Consider, for example, the ram's horn. Are you familiar with the ram's horn? Commonly blasted in the synagogue on the Jewish New Year. Have you got the idea? Okay. Now, regarding the halachic requirements of the shofar, there are many dinim. Some of the dinim are lechatchila, you should use a certain kind of shofar, but b'dieved, other kinds of shofar are mutar. Now, imagine that it is the week before Rosh Hashanah, and I am the gabbai of the shul, and our shul has no shofar. The shofar we used last year is cracked and no good. The shul has to buy a new shofar. So I go to the shofar store, and there's a selection of shofars available. And I'm going to buy a shofar. Now, at the moment, there is no lechatchila or b'dieved, because at the moment, there is no mitzvah of shofar. It's the week before Rosh Hashanah, right? There's no mitzvah of shofar at the moment. It's the week before Rosh Hashanah. Now, and I see a very expensive shofar, and I see a much cheaper one. And I ask the salesman, hey, what's the difference between them? And he says, oh, this lovely, expensive one is kosher lechatchila. And this horrible, dinky, cheap one is only kosher b'dieved. Well, as the Bach points out, at the moment, I'm under no obligation to follow the rules of lechatchila in b'dieved. If I wish, I can go ahead and buy the cheap one. And when Rosh Hashanah morning arrives, now on Rosh Hashanah morning, if there are two or more shofarot to choose from, well, and one is lechatchila and one is b'dieved, on Rosh Hashanah morning, when there's a mitzvah, of course you have to do things lechatchila if possible. If on Rosh Hashanah morning the only shofar available is one which is kosher b'dieved, so you go for it, you do the mitzvah in a way which will be kosher b'dieved. Okay.
Then we should hit a mitzvah.
Hmm?
Then we should hit a mitzvah when you're buying the shofar.
Hidol mitzvah? There is no mitzvah on the week before Rosh Hashanah, so how can it be hidol mitzvah?
Because
that's buying
a lulav, and
the same
it's the day before.
Right, same thing, same thing, same thing, lulav, correct, same thing. Now, the, let me pose for you a situation. One finds oneself traveling or visiting in some place, and one has exactly the situation. One has arrived by Aunt Millie in Kfar Saba. And Aunt Millie in Kfar Saba, unfortunately, is not keeping a kosher kitchen, and her pots are presumably treif. But the treifness of her pots is also presumably something of the distant past. You should know in passing that the rule is stam keili eino ben yomo. If you don't know otherwise, the assumption is that any given utensil has not been used in the last 24 hours. After all, you don't know anything about kitchens. But if you ask your sisters or your mothers or people who know about kitchens, they will be happy to explain to you that in general, in a kitchen, not every utensil gets used every day. Right? Not every pot, not every pan, not everything gets used every day. And therefore, the assumption of the halacha is that any given pot, any given pan, any given fork, any given dish, the assumption is, until proven otherwise, until there's evidence to the contrary, the assumption is it's not been used within the last 24 hours.
What's the evidence?
Hmm?
What is the evidence?
Well, when they call up the rabbi and they say, you know, we cooked the cheese omelet in the Fleischig pan, and you ask, oh, well, when's the last time you used the pan? Well, there are three possible answers. I go, well, we just used it for meat 2 hours ago, in which case the cheese omelet is asur d'oraisa. Or the answer might be, well, we haven't used the pan in more than 24 hours, in which case the cheese omelet is permitted. Or they might say, don't know, don't remember exactly when it was used at last. In which case, the chazaka is, the assumption of the halakha is not used within 24 hours. Okay? Now, of course, this chazaka, that a given kli has not been used within 24 hours, works fine in a household situation. Probably does not work at all in many commercial situations. For example, in a commercial restaurant, presumably every utensil does get used many times every day. After all, the difference between a commercial dishwasher, automatic dishwasher, and a household a home dishwasher, you know home dishwashers, these automatic machines, the little box, you open it up, you put in the dishes and the silverware, close it, and it washes. You know what I'm talking about? It typically holds 10, 12 sets of dishes and 10, 12 sets of cutlery. You know what I'm talking about? Together with glasses. Commercial automatic dishwashers for restaurants typically hold 2 or 3 place settings, not more. Because in commercial restaurants, the turnover time is very quick. Every set of crockery, every set of cutlery gets used a number of times every day, and therefore the turnaround time in commercial dishwashers is 2 or 3 minutes. That's 2 or 3 minutes for a whole cycle, but it only does 2 or 3 dishes at a time, right? Whereas home dishwashers do a lot at a time, but the cycle takes much longer. Therefore, the assumption of the halacha that a stam kli is not ben yomo surely shouldn't work in a commercial situation such as I described. But if there's a household situation, or perhaps there are commercial situations in which there's no reason to assume. Well, if we're talking about the cannery which tins peas, and the question is, have they used the machinery to tin shrimps? Well, if what they're always doing is peas, and it's indeed possible that they've done shrimps in the past, well, the assumption should be that's in the ancient history of the utensils. And therefore the peas, which are being tinned now, should be okay. As long as there's no reason to think that the shrimps were canned within the last 24 hours. The underlying idea is, if it is impossible to remedy the situation, then the leniencies of the Di'evit apply. Well, now, as I emphasized before, not everything is mutter b'di'evit. Those halachas where the din is mutter b'di'evit, the leniency applies when it is impossible to correct the situation. According to the Tosfos, even l'chatchila, it is correct to go ahead and prepare the food in that way if it is impossible to prepare the food in a way which is kosher l'chatchila.
This applies to pots.
Applies to everything equally. What I want you to know is pause, because I have to rush for the bus to get back to Yerushalayim. And in Yerushalayim, we'll continue this next week.